The following is a presentation of Heroes, Headers, and Hollywood. So recently, my friends and I spent an entire day watching the Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 1 from Iron Man to the Avengers. And what made it very special was that one of my friends had never seen them all the way through before. So we were in the middle of watching Iron Man 1 and Pepper Potts comes on screen. Nothing out of the ordinary there. But my friend, who's never watched really any of the Marvel movies, or, funnily enough, seen any of the X-Men movies, calls Pepper Potts Cyclops. I don't know why she did it, but we all got a very big laugh out of it, and it led to one of the ongoing jokes of the night, which was me pointing at the screen, saying, "Wait, is that Cyclops from the X-Men?" Anytime Pepper Potts appeared on screen, we all got a big laugh out of it, and, you know, it was an ongoing joke for the night. But something as simple as calling Pepper Potts Cyclops has got me in the mood to go back and watch some X-Men. Some stuff like the movies for the umpteenth time, and some stuff like reading the comic books and watching the animated series for the first time. And while doing said research, I came across quite the oddity, which turns out that the X-Men have a link to Ireland. So join me as we delve into the X-Men's connection with my home country of Ireland.
When I first came up with the X-Men, my biggest problem was I wanted a team of superheroes. And I figured out who I wanted in the original team. Let's see, there was Iceman, who could turn into ice. There was Cyclops with the power of his eyes. There was the Beast. There was Marvel Girl. There was the Angel, who could fly. The thing I loved about the Angel is when he was dressed in clothes, he'd wrap his wings around him and put a coat over it, and you couldn't see them. And there was Professor X. Well, my biggest problem was, how did they get these superpowers? I had already run out of people being bitten by radioactive spiders and being subjected to gamma rays and cosmic rays. And I took the cowardly way out. I said, I'm just going to say they're mutants.
So you're probably wondering where Ireland comes into this, and don't worry, we'll get to that. But I think it's first important to give a bit of context as to who the X-Men are and when they were created. And in 1963, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created the X-Men. And the Fantastic Four had been a huge success for Marvel, and they wanted to capitalize on it by creating a new superhero team. Appearing in X-Men number 1, which would go on to be called Uncanny X-Men from issue 114 in 1981, the original lineup consisted of Cyclops, Marvel Girl, who we better know as Jean Grey, Beast, Angel, and Iceman. And the story of the first issue is the X-Men facing off against Magneto, who's interfering with government rockets. And much of what we go on to associate with the X-Men appears in this first issue. Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters is just an exclusive private school in New York's Westchester area. The Danger Room is just a big training machine. And instead of having a Quinjet, they get driven to the airport in a custom-built Rolls Royce, where they take a remotely controlled private jet. The issue sets out the familiar formula of the villain causing havoc and the X-Men getting called into action from their mansion. Over the next 7 or so years, the mutants would go on to battle the likes of Magneto, Bolivar Trask and his army of Sentinels, Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, and the Juggernaut, who is actually Charles Xavier's stepbrother. They also appear in several crossovers with the Avengers and Namor the Submariner, but by the 1970s, they stopped publishing original material and just continued on with reprints.
I'm associate editor at Marvel Comics, working for Len Wein as editor-in-chief. Len Wein and Dave Cockrum are working on Giant Size X-Men number one, which was the idea of rebooting the team. And Stan's idea was that since, rather than just bring the original five, how should we put it, white people, Stan figured we want to try and sell this to international markets, so let's get some different people in. So suddenly we have, you know, an indigenous character, a Canadian, a German, an African. Basically, we create all of them, and we're off and running. And at the end of Giant Size number one, Angel asks the obvious question, what are we going to do with 13 X-Men? Well, you know, we'll find out next issue.
Some names are synonymous with certain comic books. If you think of Frank Miller, the names Daredevil and Batman come straight to mind. Alan Moore is associated with The Watchmen. Jonathan Hickman with his run on Fantastic Four and The Avengers. But I don't know if there's any name more synonymous with a title than Chris Claremont is with the X-Men. Now, the voice you were just listening to is Chris Claremont, talking about how the X-Men were reintroduced. And in 1975, the X-Men relaunched with a comic book called Giant-Sized X-Men number one, and it was written by Len Wein and Dave Cockrum. And it introduced new members, such as Wolverine, Storm, Nightcrawler, and Colossus. With their reintroduction, Chris Claremont was handed the comic by editor-in-chief, the previously mentioned Len Wein, who saw Claremont's enthusiasm for the material, and it was a low-risk decision to hand the X-Men to a younger writer like Claremont, as at the time, the X-Men wasn't this huge name it is today. And his first issue was Uncanny X-Men 94. It was released on August 1st, 1975, and was a direct follow-up to Giant Size X-Men number 1. Claremont quickly establishes his new team, with Cyclops staying on as his leader, and tensions rise as the X-Men are sent out on their first mission to stop the villainous Count Nefaria, who has hijacked an airbase and plans to hold every country in the world ransom. How very Spectre of him. Chris Claremont's first big arc was the Phoenix Saga, which spanned from X-Men 101 to 108, and it sees Marvel Girl, better known to us again as Jean Grey, take on the power of the Phoenix. The story is also adapted in the third season of X-Men the Animated Series with a 5-episode arc, and the Phoenix Saga, along with the larger arc of the Dark Phoenix Saga, are often considered among the greatest comic book stories of all time. Leading up to X-Men 101, the X-Men are escaping back to Earth from the space station of the evil scientist Stephen Lang, and after defeating Lang's new X-Sentinels, which are metal clones of the original 60s X-Men, and rescuing Professor X, Jean Grey, Cyclops, and Dr. Peter Corbeau, the team escapes on a shuttle. And Corbeau, being the good doctor he is, explains that the autopilot in the shuttle is damaged, and that they'll all be killed by the approaching solar flares. And it's only Corbeau who can manually fly the shuttle, but he would get killed in mere seconds. So Jean, very unselfishly, who has the powers of telepathy, can absorb the Doctor's knowledge of flying the shuttle and offers to sacrifice herself. And with the rest of the X-Men safe aboard a life cell on the spacecraft, Jean flies it back to Earth, crash landing in Jamaica Bay. The rest of the X-Men emerge from the wreckage, leading to one of the most iconic panels in comic book history. And after coming into contact with the radiation of the solar flares, she emerges from the bay with a new costume and proclaims herself the Phoenix. After collapsing, she is taken to hospital, where Professor X tells the X-Men to go take a holiday. At the suggestion of Banshee, they go to his newly inherited ancestral home, Cassidy Keep. And that's right, the X-Men are going to Ireland.
It was far across the sea when the devil got a hold of me. He wouldn't set me free, so he kept me so for ransom.
So while Chris Claremont came on to write the new X-Men series, one of the names that wasn't mentioned was Sean Cassidy, aka Banshee. And he's an Irish superhero. It's rare to see Ireland depicted in comic book media, whether it be comic book themselves, TV, film. I think seeing any superhero go to Ireland is genuinely fascinating. And the fact there is an Irish superhero that no one really talks about is really cool. Now, there are certain well-established characters in the Marvel Universe who do have Irish heritage. Both Daredevil, aka Matt Murdock, and Captain America, aka Steve Rogers, both come from an Irish background. Murdock has a strong connection to Catholicism, the predominant religion in Ireland, and Steve Rogers' parents emigrated from Ireland to Brooklyn. As mentioned, though, the reason for them going to Ireland is because of Banshee.
A stag fighting a dragon is the Cassidy family crest. My family. It's carved in stone above the hearth in the Great Hall of Cassidy Keep.
So, who is the Banshee? According to the website CassidyClan.org, the name Cassidy actually comes from the north of Ireland. It says, all Cassidys originate from the lower Loch Earn region of County Fermanagh. For centuries, the Cassidys were prominent in the arts and the fields of medicine and religion. Like other families, over time they moved to other parts of Ulster and across Ireland. As for Sean Cassidy himself, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe gives him this bio. Sean Cassidy was born as the heir to the castle and estate of Cassidy Keep. He studied at Trinity College Dublin, where he graduated with a Bachelor in Science. It doesn't specify what type of science he got his bachelor's degree in, but we can assume that he probably got north of 550 points in his Leaving Cert, which tells us that he was probably a smart lad in school. He fell in love and married Maeve Rourke, much to the ire of his cousin Tom, who was also in love with her. From there, he joined Interpol, the international policing organization, foregoing his degree in science. Maybe that Trinity degree wasn't all it was cracked up to be. But unbeknownst to Sean, who was away working, Maeve got pregnant with their daughter, Teresa. Shortly after her birth, however, Maeve got tragically killed by a bomb in Northern Ireland. It seems that even the X-Men got caught up in the troubles. His cousin Tom took custody of Teresa, and a devastated Sean left Interpol, eventually turning to a life of crime. Unfortunately for Banshee, he was introduced as a villain in the original X-Men issue number 28, and it wasn't a flattering first appearance for the Irish superhero. It was released on January 1st, 1967, and was created by Roy Thomas and Werner Roth. And in the issue, Banshee, along with his partner the Ogre, who oddly enough is just a human and not an actual ogre, plan to attack the X-Men's mansion. And the Banshee uses his powerful sonic scream to knock out the X-Men, and the Ogre attempts to kidnap Professor X. Marvel Girl stops the kidnapping and the partners retreat to their ship. Unfortunately, the way the Banshee is drawn, he's made to look like a monkey or a chimp. It's a form of anti-Irish propaganda and isn't really a good look for the villain. Though not to be deterred, they go back for a second attempt, but this time the X-Men are prepared. Professor X subdues the Banshee, locking him in a chamber so he can't use his powers, and they easily go on to defeat the Ogre. They then release Banshee, who is forced to work for the villainous group Factor 3, and Xavier disarms an explosive headband, freeing him from their control, thus turning him from villain to hero. His next big appearance came in the previously mentioned Giant Size X-Men number 1, and Banshee was among the new team of mutants whose first mission was to go and rescue the original X-Men on the living island Krakoa. This leads us to the fateful issue 101, where Jean becomes the Phoenix, but for a second time, I can say, the X-Men are going to Ireland. The single issue was released on the 20th of July 1976, and the cover date, which isn't necessarily the true date of publication, was October 1976, which is when we could say the X-Men visited Ireland. So what was going on in Ireland in 1976? Well, the big news at the time was the resignation of then-President Carúl O'Dolig. He became the first president to do so after a controversial decision to refer the new Emergency Powers Bill to the Supreme Court to test its constitutionality. RTE reported the following, quote, on the day he signed the bill into law, an IRA bomb in Mount Mellock, County Laois, killed Garda Michael Clerken. Carúl O'Dolig's perceived procrastination was seen by some government members to have contributed to the death of this Garda. Defence Minister Patrick Donegan is believed to have called the President a thundering disgrace. Following the remarks, the President tendered his resignation from office. End quote.
Do you see this move as embarrassing the government?
I have, this is not a matter for me. I have my independence as President under the Constitution. I've taken my decision, the right to resign. I've indicated the reasons why I've done so.
Would it be out of place to ask you if Mr. Donegan had resigned that you wouldn't have made this move?
I don't wish to discuss matters of this matter, this kind.
17 points to 10. 3 goals and 8 points to 10 points. We're coming up to the final whistle and Dublin are All-Ireland champions of 1976. And they fully merited the victory. And look at that for excitement on the hill.
And a few weeks earlier, on the 26th of September, Dublin were crowned All-Ireland football champions, beating Kerry by a scoreline of 3-8 to 10 points. And 3 weeks earlier, Cork beat Wexford in the All-Ireland hurling final by 4 points to earn their 22nd All-Ireland title. Ben Crenshaw won the Carroll's Irish Open at Portmarnock that August, back when fags were allowed to sponsor sporting events. And at Mount Temple Comprehensive School in Dublin, a little-known band called U2 was about to form. I wonder what they're up to now.
It's the space station zombies. We gotta take them out without hurting them.
Leave it to me.
What was that?
Sounds like the Lord of the Castle's come home to be buried.
According to the comic, they spent about a week in the capital before moving on to Banshee's ancestral family home. I like to think that Logan, aka Wolverine, spent most of his time drinking Guinness with the locals, telling them stories about his experiences in the various wars he's fought, and I imagine Storm probably would have gone to Dublin Zoo or the Phoenix Park. And after leaving the Big Smoke, the X-Men head west to Ballina by train before hiring a car to head to the Cassidy Keep. Now, doing a bit of research, I figured they most likely rented a Ford Escort or Cortina, but we can't rule out the fact they could have hired a Volkswagen Passat. In the comic, Wolverine complains about the rough conditions of the rural roads leading to the castle, though Banshee retorts that the roads are merely just built with character, and I can confirm that rural Irish roads are still built with the same character. And when they arrive at the castle, they're met by Eamon O'Donnell, the castle steward. Unbeknownst to them, though, Banshee's cousin Black Tom is actually planning to kill the group of mutants, alongside Professor X's half-brother Kane Marko, aka the Juggernaut.
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch!
After freshening up and arriving for dinner, they fall through a trapdoor and are captured by Black Tom. In the next issue, 102, a melee ensues with the X-Men battling Black Tom and the Juggernaut. Much of the issue is actually an origin story for Storm succumbing to her fear of claustrophobia in the castle's dungeons, and it takes her back to her time growing up on the streets of Cairo. Meanwhile, an incapacitated Nightcrawler is taken away from the fight, and unfortunately, this is where we get to see the American's idea of the Irish in full effect, because he's taken away by leprechauns. Here in Ireland, I don't think we really consider leprechauns to be part of our cultural identity. It's a very stereotypical thing, to the point where I reckon if you asked about 100 Americans to name something associated with Ireland, the answer would either be Guinness or leprechauns. And sadly, it doesn't surprise me that the American comic book company would use the small green lads when writing about a story set in Ireland. Something else that pains me is the voice acting for Banshee in the animated series adaptation. It's a pretty brutal accent, and it's the kind of Irish accent you'd hear on an SNL sketch.
You've disgraced the Cassidy family for the last time, Black Tom, and you've stood in my way too long, big brother.
In issue 103, it's revealed that a mysterious person has paid Black Tom and the Juggernaut to lure out and kill Professor X. Nightcrawler, being the only one to have escaped the fight, is informed by Eamon the Caretaker and the Leprechauns that the two villains have taken their families hostage. Knowing it's really Xavier that they want, Nightcrawler projects himself as an image of Charles and engages them in a fight. After Storm frees herself and summons a powerful hurricane, the Banshee is able to kick Black Tom over the side of the castle, and Juggernaut, who, in quite a moment of sweet friendship, dives over the edge into the water to save his friend. Isn't that lovely? Like I mentioned earlier, there's something interesting about seeing a group of famous superheroes come to your home country. I wasn't alive in the 1970s, but I've seen enough through pictures and videos to know what it would have been like when they arrived. Something as simple as Wolverine giving out about the conditions of Irish roads feels very authentically Irish, even if the accents and leprechauns are a bit much. Will any major superhero blockbuster ever be set, or even partly set, in Ireland ever happen? I doubt it. But it is really cool just to see it in comic panels or in a cartoon.